a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get outside. This is KSL Outdoors. Brought to you by Bear River Lodge. 2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure. KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Headed into hour number two of the program for another week, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here. Tim Hughes in the studios of West Jordan, back recording the program on Thursday at home. Was fun checking in with Russ Smith from Sky Call as he makes his first big cross-country drive with the RV with Mama in the back. Mama's probably driving, to be honest with you. But he checked in from Florida in our first segment today, and they're headed to, where is it, Hattiesburg?
Well, he went to Hattiesburg.
Oh, he went to Hattiesburg.
Yeah, he was going to go visit his son, but he's in Mississippi, too, so I don't know where.
He's headed to Mississippi after this one's promised to check in with us next week. And our thanks, as always, to Roger Eggett from Bear River Lodge and Trax Power Sports for checking in with us. Just a heads up of what's coming up in this hour. We'll go road tripping. I said in our lineup with Gus and Wooly, I'm talking about Bob and Mark. It's road tripping with BobandMark.com. And if you want to stay with us, Sarah Huey will join us from Solitude on our Snow Day segment. We'll get a little look at the avalanche report as well with the help of Craig Gordon from the Avalanche Center. And then wrap up the program with a nice little get-to-know-you segment with the founder of Black Diamond Experts. Dan James will join me for a few minutes, so we look forward to that. All right, but as we start this hour, it is our usual chat with the Division of Wildlife Resources, and we are fortunate today to have Faith Jolly back with us. And it always gives us an excuse to play George Michael music. I don't know what else would give us that excuse, but anyway, Faith Jolly, good morning.
Good morning, and it's a good excuse. It's a catchy little song.
So. Yeah, who else has the same music?
We wanted to get together to talk about February being Bald Eagle Month. I hope you don't mind if we throw another couple of quick questions at you based on some of the press releases you've sent out. Is that all right?
Sure. We'll see if I remember them.
So I know it's like a pop quiz here. One of them that we got a lot of calls on, and people were concerned for a while that this dead canine that was found in Duchesne was a wolf or a wolf hybrid, turns out not to be the case, right?
Yeah, that caused some stir. There were a lot of people that got excited about that, but yes, we submitted the carcass for some DNA testing just to be positive. But then we also tracked down the owner, and they confirmed it was a German Shepherd dog. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, he watched it get hit out there in Duchesne. And anyway, just wasn't able to. It was too heavy, and he's kind of an elderly gentleman, and wasn't able to remove the body. And then some other people found it. And anyway, the excitement ensued. Yeah.
We all have dogs we love, and so, you know, that part of the story is sad. But the fact that it wasn't a wolf, I guess, will calm down some of the rumor mills and the conspiracy theories out there.
Yeah, the social media did go crazy.
Oh, so
that's
my gosh.
Part of why we put this out, just to confirm. We are monitoring wolves. This is some weird, conspiracy cover-up. We will, obviously confirm if there is a wolf sighting or whatever, but this one was just not it.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim, can I ask another question of Faith before we get to the bald eagle?
Anything you want, sure. Navi.
Okay, a couple things. In my, recent fish fights, I talked about the Weber River freezing. And so I have two questions. The first one is, are they considering raising the water? I know water matters, and we need the water, but if the river freezes completely over, it's going to be a truly sad story for the trout. And then the second question, you can address them in any order you wish. Have you got any more intel about the Weber between Wanship and Echo? Because we had 3 hours of no water and a lot of fish died. Have we come to grips with how many died? Has there been any shock surveys since that time to see how the impact was on that section of the Weber?
Yeah, those are good questions. And I, unfortunately, have not heard any follow-ups on that. I know that they were looking into kind of getting, you know, final count numbers, and then they're still coordinating with the Utah Bureau of Reclamation on to see, you know, possible water level issues that we might run into in the future. But yeah, on that specific one, I have not heard any final updates, unfortunately.
And have you heard that the Weber River's been freezing over?
I personally have not, but I'm sure that our biologists in that area are probably kind of cued in more on that. And probably they have gotten reports. It just has not made its way to my desk.
Yeah. Well, sometimes we pepper you with these questions, knowing that you'll, you know, ask a few people maybe on the fishing side and just see what you might be able to find out for us next time we chat. But I did want to ask you, too. Both Navi and I were out for a few days with this Omicron variant of COVID over the last few weeks. Because of the spread of COVID, you guys have gone back into, and I think you did this before, temporarily anyway, into a virtual field day option for hunter education. And I just got the notification of that.
Yes, we are. You know, we want to make sure people feel comfortable and they can stay safe. And the big game, you know, hunt application is coming up next week. We want to make sure anybody that needs to still can safely take hunter education before that happens. So, yeah, we always offer an online course. That's always been an option, as well as our in-person classes. But this specific change is we're now allowing for kind of a virtual field day option. Yep. So we'll be allowing that basically from now until the end of February.
So you can just go to wildlife.utah.gov, I would guess, and find that information?
Yep, exactly. Yep, go on our website. You can scroll down to our hunter education portal and all the information and links and how to register is all in there. Yep.
All right. I want to make sure we don't burn all of our time here and we get a chance to mention the viewing events that are coming up. Is it 2 weeks? 2 weeks away for the bald eagle viewing that happens in Utah every February.
Yes, and this is something we're always excited about. You know, it's for anybody that's seen a bald eagle in person, it's really cool. And it's really exciting. And we just get a lot of them down coming through the state during February, just kind of migrating through as they're heading back north and or back south. And so, yeah, there's a couple different places you can see a lot, actually, pretty close. And so we're holding a couple different viewing events. The first two are going to be February 8th. One in southern Utah at the Rush Lake Ranch, kind of near Cedar City. And then the next one on February 5th is going to be at our Fountain Green State Fish Hatchery, down by Fountain Green in central Utah. So anyway, super cool. And then northeastern Utah, they're going to be holding one on February 19th, so a couple weeks out still, at the Array National Wildlife Refuge. So yeah, super cool to go. We're a biologist at all of these. We've got to help answer questions about bald eagles and spotting scopes. We're telling people to bring their own and, you know, try to social distance if you can. It's outdoors, so you can spread out. And anyway, but it's just super, super cool. They're really, really impressive.
I think it's important, Navi, to remember there are people that go through their entire lives and never see a bald eagle flying in the wild. And yet, amazingly, here in Utah, you can go to one place and actually see 20, 40, 50, who knows, depending on where you are in the day.
Absolutely. I mean, Farmington Bay is an excellent place to go, but the Weber River up and down that thing, particularly near Hennifer, those fish just fill those birds fill those trees in that area. And the reason why is the whitefish that exist. And it's a great feeding, great wintering place. And like she says, it's really exciting to see them. And you think, no big deal, it's a bird. Well, when you see it, you won't think that.
No.
So come and look at the birds. I 100% agree with her.
Yeah.
Totally. And you mentioned some of those, but we're only doing 3 viewing events at kind of the locations I already mentioned. But yeah, there's a ton of spots, particularly along the Wasatch Front, that you can just go see them yourself. And like you mentioned, the Farming Bay one is a really good one too, because same thing, you can see a ton right off the road out on the ice, and it is really cool.
The great thing though about going to one of these organized events, whether it's the 5th or the 19th though, is that you get a little education along the way All you really need to do is be able to come dressed warm. You can bring your own spotting scopes or binoculars, but even occasionally you'll have those on hand too.
Yeah, we do. Yep, and we like to let people, because it is funner if you can see them up close and kind of see what they're doing, if they're eating fish or whatever. And I should also plug, a lot of people get really excited about this. I don't know if you guys are pin collectors, but we do every year design a new kind of collectible fall legal month pin. And so you can pick one of those up at any of our regional offices or at any of the events.
Oh, cool. All right. Collectible pin to go along with it. And again, information on those areas, times, and the information, directions on how to find it is available at wildlife.utah.gov. Faith Jolly, thanks for all you do and for keeping us in touch with things that are going on with the division day in and day out when we aren't even really thinking about you.
Yes, great.
Well,
talk to you guys.
I meant that as a compliment.
Even if
I always think of her, Tim, so speak for yourself.
All right. Faith Jolly from the Division of Wildlife Resources. Again, it's wildlife.utah.gov is the website. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We're going road tripping with Bob and Mark. Road tripping with Bob and Mark. .com. Where we're headed, I don't have a clue because they haven't sent me an email yet, but we look forward to sharing it with you next here on KSL News Radio.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's time to do a little road tripping today. Road tripping with Bob and Mark.com.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the
Although
road
I'm pretty sure it's just with Bob today. Mark's in the midst of some meetings here in Salt Lake City, up from his spot down there in Mona, Utah. But Bob Grove, welcome.
Once again.
Hey, before we jump into what you wanted to talk about, and I'm excited to share a spot that you have picked out from the many blogs you have on your website, can we give a shout out to Mitch? I appreciate you forwarding his message on an email a couple of days ago, a fan of the show and a fan in particular, of you guys' segment.
Yeah, I got an email from Mitch this past week, and I was excited to see that we have somebody listening.
Besides family, right?
Besides family. Besides our wives listening, we've got Mitch listening, so I was excited to see that we have a fan. And thanks, Mitch. Keep listening.
Well, and here's what he said, and this really warms my heart because it was one of the intents when we got together and started formulating what the show was actually going to look like week in and week out. He said, my job often won't allow me to take a long vacation, and I don't want to look past some of the sites here in Utah and other closer locales. So much history here, and he just appreciates kind of riding along vicariously with our conversations. And my connection with Russ at Sky Call, of course, was all about that, taking people not just to places in Utah but all over the world, and hopefully we've accomplished that over the years together. You know, my brother reached out to me the other day because he and his group of Harley riders up in Montana rode part of Route 66 a couple of years ago, and he wants to do the finishing touches on that with the other part of Route 66 this summer. The spot that you have picked out to tell our listeners about today is right on that route, isn't it?
It is. It's just south of the route because Interstate 40 now follows the old Route 66 route through Arizona, New Mexico, and then eventually hooks up into California and ends in Santa Monica. It starts in Chicago and ends in Santa Monica. And I've spent a lot of time traveling between Albuquerque and California. And so the areas that I know best are along that section. And actually, the longest original section of Route 66 is in this area. in Arizona. It actually goes to the California state line and ends in Ash Fork, Arizona. It goes through Seligman and Peach City and some of these areas on the original roads.
Well,
this is a cool place.
Yeah, this Acoma Pueblo looks like a really unique stop for people, but it does have to be sort of a destination. You can't just stumble onto it.
Yeah, it's not just on the side of the highway there on I-40, so you got to drive south to it. It's not a long drive, and I do have some information on our blog that'll help you get there, but it's definitely worth going to. This is one of these attractions that very few people are aware of, and it's one that's definitely worth putting the time in to go see. It's I spend a lot of time as a guide taking folks to areas where ancient civilizations are, such as Mesa Verde and the Trail of the Ancients and some of the places in the Four Corners area. But it's not often I get to take them into the pueblos in New Mexico. And so this is one of the several pueblos that are in New Mexico, and they still live primitively the way they did generations and generations ago, hundreds of years.
I look at your website, and it says there are 3,000 tribal members that still live in the nearby villages of Acomita, McCarty's, and Anzac in that same area.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of the Acoma tribe, the Acoma Pueblo. It's actually called the Acoma Sky City Pueblo because it's up on top of a mesa. So they've lived on top of this mesa for many generations, and they've blasted a road along the side of it so that you can get up to it now. Before, I've actually climbed down through where you would climb up on your own without driving up there. And I'll take my groups down through there. It's kind of an adventure just to go up and down through there. But we'll take the bus up to the top where they blasted the road out. And there's probably about 300 or so adobe-style buildings up on top where they're still living the way they did back many generations ago. There's no power. There's no running water. And what the Acoma are best known for is their pottery. They have these really neat, I'm not sure what the designs are called, geometric type of designs. And I'll stick a couple of photos up there of what the pottery looks like, but you've probably seen it if you've been in any of the finer stores that sell Indian pottery.
Can I ask you, and you may not know the answer to this, but I am curious, why no electricity, no water? Do they choose to live that way? Would they take it if it was delivered to them or no?
I think they do choose this way. I think they're holding on to tradition of maintaining the traditions of this very special pueblo. I mean, this is a very special pueblo on top of this mesa. They've made their living through their crafts, their pottery especially. And I think they choose to, because down at the bottom of this mesa is the visitor center that's modern. Mm. I mean, it's got all the luxuries of a modern visitor center with a restaurant and it's a beautiful facility, but just, less than a mile away is this mesa with this, with this village on top. And they are treated, as a special people, and there's a really cool cathedral up on the top that was built in the 1600s, and the story behind its construction is pretty interesting. What I wanted to point out is that when you're on these road trips, this is one thing that I always try to emphasize, is when you're on a road trip, don't be in such a hurry to get to the final destination, because I always have considered the trip as part of the biggest part of the journey.
Yeah.
I mean, this is how I used to teach my kids on these road trips. I'd stop at a lot of interesting roadside attractions of places along the way and make the trip the journey and not just the destination. This is one of those places, if you're heading down into New Mexico in that area, maybe into Albuquerque and Santa Fe and that, this is definitely a stop worth making. And you can get all that information on our website of how to get to it, a little more information of its background.
Yeah, there is a cost to get in, by the way, and I find this interesting, too. You can take photos, but they do not allow video recordings, drawings, or sketching, but plenty to look at there. 300 two- and three-story adobe buildings to look at in that cathedral you already mentioned. Go to roadtrippingwithbobandmark.com. Let me spell it for you. Acoma, Acoma Pueblo. Put it into the search box. It's worth finding. Bob, as always, thank you, sir.
You bet. My pleasure.
Stay with us. We will have our snow day segment headed to Solitude next. On the road again.
Gotta have faith. A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.